Thank you for coming. The topic of today's talk is randomness compression in networks. This is my summer research project with Dr. Jamie Sigrad and Anurag Ans here at Perimeter Institute from May to August. Some of you may know we had a poster session last week. I'm the person who presented this poster, and in today's talk, I can cover a lot of details of the background and the problem we solved and motivation and solution for both classical and quantum networks in today's talk. This is the outline for today's talk. First, I'm going to explain three types of networks. We have classical networks, quantum networks, and classical quantum networks. And then I'm going to talk about the goal of my summer research project and the problem we are going to solve. Then my project, my talk will have two parts. The first one is solving the problem for classical networks. The next one is solving problem for the quantum networks. And at the end, I'm going to talk about next steps. First, what is network? The first type of network is classical network. In the classical network, we have four main components: input, output, shared randomness source, and people or parties. This is one example of classical network called Bell scenario. In this case, we have input X and Y, output A and B, shared randomness source R, and the people Alice and Bob. So as I said, this is just one example. So we can have 4 input, 5 outputs, or 10 sources of randomness, or 20 people. And we can rearrange in many ways. And how does this work? For example, in this case, first, R is determined randomly with some probability distribution. And Alice generates A for given X and R. Bob generates B for given Y and R. Now, by combining Alice and Bob's work, we can determine the resulting probability distribution, P of output given input. In this example, which is probability of A and B given X and Y. In the classical network, the probability of output given input can be expressed as a summation over all possible randomness sources. This is a big feature of classical network. The second type of network is called quantum networks. Now, Alice and Bob have shared quantum state instead of shared randomness source. Now, probability of output given input looks like this. This is the third type of the network called classical quantum networks. Alice has classical randomness and output quantum state. And this quantum state can be expressed as a summation over all classical randomness sources. This type looks a little different from the other two, but some researchers are interested in what we can do with this type of network. And the pictures I had for each type are just examples. As I said, we can have more inputs or output, and we can rearrange in many ways. And these are very popular networks. This is called Bell scenario. This is called line-like scenario with three parties. And this is called triangle scenario. Next, why do we study these networks? One main reason is to study quantumness. Before finding quantum mechanics, if you say A and B have a correlation and Alice and Bob don't have communication, then this was the only possibility we could have. There must be a hidden variable which affects both A and B and makes the correlation. But now After finding quantum mechanics, we have another option. Alice and Bob have a shared quantum state. So by studying these networks, we can study what is possible and not possible classically and quantumly. And we can compare the classical and quantum cases. Also, these networks allow us to test effects of quantum entanglement. That's why we are interested in these networks. And here is my project. For a given network and the probability of output given input, can we compress the cardinality of randomness required or dimension of entanglement required? Why do we want to do this? Because randomness and entanglement are resources in real world. The more resources we need, the more money we need. So we want to produce networks as cheaply as possible. If we have three networks resulting in the same probability distribution, but with different costs, everyone should choose this one, the cheapest one. Like no one would choose these two if all of the three have the same task. To get better sense what compressing randomness is, I'll give you a very simple example. In classical network, here we have Bell scenario again. We have input x and y, always 1. And output 0 or 1, binary. Alice and Bob has shared randomness source. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9. These are distributed uniformly. Now, the cardinality of the set R is 10. Alice and Bob generate A and B in these ways. Here, X and Y are always 1. So this is basically R module 2. By combining Alice and Bob's work, we can determine probability of output given input to be this. My question here is, can we compress the randomness set R without changing the resulting probability distribution? How do you think? Do you think we can reduce the cardinality of the set R without changing the resulting probability distribution? In other words, yes?
Yes.
Yes. The answer is yes. Because we have R module 2, we don't need 10 elements in the set R. We need only 0 and 1, and still we can produce this probability distribution. So by renormalizing probability function, now we can reduce the set of the size of the set R from 10 to 2 and save resources and money. Before and after compression, the resulting probability distribution didn't change. After the compression, this is the exactly same as the original probability distribution, so this is called exact case. This is another example. X and Y are always 1 for the Bell scenario again. And we have output 0, 1, or 2. And shared randomness source, 0, 1, or 2 as well. Now the cardinality of the set R is 3. Its elements are distributed in these ways, not uniform distribution this time. Alice and Bob generate A and B in these ways. Again, X and Y are always 1, so this is basically R module 3. By combining Alice and Bob's work, we can determine the resulting probability distribution to be this. Okay, I have a question again. Can we compress the randomness set R without changing this probability distribution? Can we throw away some of these elements without affecting this? Yes, the answer is no. Because we have module 3, and we need all of these elements to produce these three cases. So the answer is no. However, what happens if the person who gave you this problem comes here and said, I don't mind to have a result slightly defined from the original probability distribution. Now, the answer is yes. By proposing a new probability distribution, p hat, this is almost same as the original probability distribution, but slightly different. If we just want to make this probability distribution, we don't have to make this case. A and B are both 2. So we can throw away this element to make this p hat. And by renormalizing probability function, now we could reduce the size of the set R from 3 to 2. Now, after the compression, the resulting probability distribution looks almost same, but slightly different. So this is called approximate case. These two are approximately same. Here is more qualitative description of my project. Suppose you have you like mountains. But as you know, we don't have mountains here in Waterloo. So you decided to buy a poster of these pretty mountains somewhere in Canada and put it in your office. You went to a poster store and find these three posters, but with different prices. If you want to buy at least one of them, which one would you buy? Not the left one, not the right one for sure, because something looks weird here. We can't see the pretty mountains so much. How about the left and the middle ones? This looks almost same, but the left one has double price. So I think most of people would choose the middle one. But why do these have different prices? Here's an answer. The left picture has 256 colors. This is the original poster. The middle has only the half colors. The right picture has only 4 colors. This is why this looks weird. And you didn't like the quality of the right poster, but you were okay with the quality of the middle one, although this had only the half colors compared to the original one. My project is the same. We don't have to make the resulting probability distributions exactly the same. What we need is making these two probability distributions almost the same under some tolerance level, epsilon. This is also called error. So we can reduce the dimension of the randomness set by making such new probability distribution, p hat, with less resources. So for example, here, the difference of these two pictures was under your tolerance, although they had different number of colors or resources. Here we have problem.
Sorry, quick question. So the norm here is that taking over the outputs, and this is supposed to hold for every input.
Sorry, I couldn't hear.
So just to understand what role the norm is playing there, are you taking the norm over the outputs, and the equation is supposed to hold for every input, or are you taking the norm over both? When you compute that norm, you're going to have some kind of sum over.
We are using infinity norm, so.
Well, what are you summing over outputs, inputs, both? What is the norm taking over? Is it taking over the outputs?
Over all output and input combinations. So now we have a problem. The two examples I just gave you are very simple and easy to answer. But as I said, we can have 6 inputs or 8 outputs or 1,000 input set size or 2,000 output set size. And we can have very complicated networks. How can we generalize this idea for any given network? The answer for classical network is using the power of statistics, Chernoff bound. Here's Hermann Chernoff, who proposed the Chernoff bound. This is Chernoff bound. First, we take n samples on the variable and define di as a function of I sample. For any I, we have di is bounded between 0 and 1 and has the same expectation value. For the sum of all di's and epsilon positive, we have this probability and bounded by this number. And let's apply Chernoff bound for simple classical network. We have only one randomness source here. And let di to be probability of a and b given x, y, and ith r, I sample. And p hat is now the average of all di's. An expectation of di mu is probability of a and b given x and y. With these notations, Chernoff bound tells you how many samples you need to get to make p hat epsilon close to p, original probability. By solving this for n, we conclude the cardinality of the randomness required is bounded by this number. Here, nx, ny, na, and nb are size of each input and output set. In other words, the cardinality of the randomness set can be compressed at least to this number. How about more complicated classical networks? All of these networks can be expressed in this form. This is called a general classical network. For example, for the Bell scenario, H, the number of input and output are 2, and M, the number of randomness source is 1. For the triangle scenario, H is 3 and M is 3. And for simplicity in my presentation, I have the same number of input and output, but of course you can have different number of input and output. So remember, we use Chernoff bound for the Bell scenario, but we cannot use Chernoff bound for the general classical network because we have more than one randomness source. Chernoff bound allows us to have only one randomness source. So we needed to derive a new statistical inequality theorem named multivariate Chernoff bound. Here we have m number of randomness, and we make n observations on each variable. Now, di is a function of m number of random sources. Again, for any I, di is bounded between 0 and 1 and has the same expectation value. And d is sum of all possible di's. Then we want to find the bound for this probability. After this long, yet this looks long to present in a slide, but this is very simple derivation based on Anurag's counting argument. He's one of my supervisors here. We derived this bound to be this number. Also, the derivation allows us to have different number of observations on each variable. For simplicity, in my presentation, I have the same number of observations on each variables, but our theorem allows us to have like 10 observations on the first one, 4 observations on the second one, and so on. These don't have to be the same. Okay, so using this multi-value Chernoff bound, we solved the problem for the general classical network. We proved the cardinality of each randomness source can be reduced at least to this number. This is called bound for approximate case or approximate solution because we can have epsilon error. The next question you have might be, how good is our solution? For this general classical network, we have previous study which determined the cardinality of which randomness source required to be this number for any m. This is called bound for exact case or exact solution because this is for epsilon is zero. And these researchers are PI, and today we have reading author, Dr. Dennis Rosett here. Now let's compare these two. The figures shows the comparison of our approximate solution with the exact solution. The y-axis is the cardinality of randomness each randomness required, and the x-axis is a product of input and output set size. For constant H3 and epsilon 0.05%, this is the exact solution from the previous studies. And other three lines are our approximate solution for m is 1, m is 2, and m is 3. And these two are upper bound, so we want to make upper bound as lower as possible. The figure shows, especially for the case m is 1 and a larger input and output set size, we improved the upper bound. Our bound gives more compression than the previous study. So next graph, we have constant m and we varied h. You can see our approximate solutions don't change so much for increasing h, input and output set size, but the exact solution grows rapidly as h, input set size and output set size increase. And these are how much we made improvements. Next, what values of epsilon our bound gives more compression than the exact bound? As you can see here, as epsilon gets close to zero, our approximate bound increases. Oh. So this figure shows for which networks we should use approximate and exact solutions. Wherever exact solution is lower than the approximate solution, we should use exact solution because it's exact, no error. For example, if your network has H3 and M3, this is triangle scenario, and the product of input and offset size is 600, and your desired tolerance level is 0.01%, then approximate bound gives more compression than the exact bound. If your desired tolerance level is 0.01%, for example here, you should use exact solution because exact solution is lower than the approximate solution. For bigger H, we can have smaller tolerance level and still we can provide more compression than the previous study. So the solution I just presented was derived by compressing randomness source altogether using multivariate Chernoff bound. However, last week we found better solution by compressing randomness sources one by one using Chernoff bound. This is better than this solution because we have epsilon square here, while we have epsilon to the power of n plus 1 here. This is very recent progress, so now we are trying to find how good this is and how we can improve this solution. This is a summary of randomness compression in classical networks. We derive a new statistical inequality, multivariate Chernoff bound, to maintain the structure of the network. Multivariate Chernoff bound allows us to have variables sharing sources of randomness, while the general Chernoff bound can have only independent variables. This is a new feature of our theorem. For more details of the derivation, ask me later. It was long to present in a slide, but it was actually short and simple to understand, and we didn't use any difficult techniques. For the classical network, using multivariate Chernoff bound, we bounded the cardinality of randomness required for the approximate case. And our bound performs better than the bound for the exact case for larger input and output size. And our bound performs especially well for smaller number of randomness sources. And we can further improve our result based on the recent progress. Here's the next question. Does this solution work for quantum networks too? The answer is no. Because remember when we used multivariate Chernoff bound, we made samples. We made a lot of samples. In the quantum networks, once we make sample, the quantum state will collapse. So we cannot use the same technique for quantum networks. However, we have some findings for quantum networks too. The previous study determined a lower bound and upper bound of the dimension of entanglement required for Bell scenario and very specific non-local game and winning probability. Their proof was based on embezzlement and self-testing. Their problem setting was little different from ours, but with our notations, what he did was basically in the specific network to get this condition, the dimension of entanglement required is bounded between these two numbers. His condition was a little different from our conditions. He had a function of probability of output given input and a function of the new probability distribution. And he had very specific function for these two. Then we showed if this bound is also is true for these conditions, this bound is also true for our conditions. We could derive this condition based on his condition. So we conclude this bound is also true for our problem, our case. Remember in the for the general classical network, we had upper bound for both approximate and exact cases. An exact case is constant for any tolerance level. The approximate upper bound grows like epsilon to the power of negative n plus 1. These are both upper bounds. So true cardinality of randomness required must be in this region. For the specific quantum network, we have upper bound and lower bound for the approximate case. The upper bound grows like epsilon to the negative 1, and lower bound grows like epsilon to the negative 1 over 8. The true dimension of entanglement required must be in this region. So in the general classical network, the upper bound is always finite. But for this specific quantum networks, the lower bound grows to infinity. So we conclude we cannot compress the entanglement, dimension of entanglement so much, because lower bound grows to infinity as tolerance level gets close to zero. Now, some of you may wonder, why are we talking about a specific quantum network? How about other networks? This is what we are looking for, good solution for the general quantum network. Good solution here means lower bound stays in finite. Lower bound doesn't go to infinity as epsilon gets closer to zero. Now we found a very specific quantum network, which we cannot compress a lot. Then this indicates we cannot have a good solution for the general quantum network. So that's why the quantum networks are more tricky than classical networks. Here's a summary of randomness compression in quantum networks. We cannot compress the dimension of entanglement for the specific quantum networks so much. The lower bound of the dimension required grows to infinity as the epsilon gets smaller, closer to zero. Next, we cannot have the good solution for the general quantum network. And the compressing dimension of entanglement in certain cases will be a big breakthrough. And these are next steps we have in our head. Improving multivariate Chernoff bound, we have some ideas to make it tighter. We also want to derive matrix multivariate Chernoff bound, and we can use this to find upper bound for classical quantum case. And we also want to find applications of multivariate Chernoff bound in other fields. The new statistical inequality we found was independent of the problem in physics. So we may find applications in economics or biology. Okay, so this is the end of my topic. Thank you for listening. you have any question? Yes.
So I would say something when you compare for fixed epsilon and you increase the number of the cardinality of outputs and inputs, actually it seems that there is something different. Like if you increase the number of inputs, kind of the scale of the coefficient of the PA given X will stay relatively the same. But if you increase the number of outputs, then it may be that all these coefficients they become small, and then that this epsilon will be large, like in comparison, like in the asymptotic. If we go back to the graph. Yeah, like for example in those graphs. So it's like we fix the epsilon, but like if I have the uniform description for binary outputs, like just like epsilon 0.05 is like really small in comparison. But if you have like 1,000 outputs, that starts to be large. Like. But of course, like what's interesting there is that the NX and the NA are on the same board.
So, yeah, I think that's why we.
I'm trying to get some kind of physical feeling when those things go to like infinity. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, we haven't thought about that.
So, do you know anything about what's known about lower bounds for the classical case?
Lower bound?
Are any lower bounds known?
I think lower bound is 1 for the general case, but because lower bound depends on each case.
Sure.
For the general case, it's 1.
Yeah, so these upper bounds work for any correlation. So I would expect if you have a lower bound, you would ask for, if you have a specific correlation,
yeah,
keep a lower bound on that. So handle them one at a time. And
you'd ask for the worst case, right?
Yeah. I don't really know what you're doing myself. It's a good question. Any other questions? If not, nope.
So does your proof give you some kind of constructive algorithm how to do the compression, how to find the corresponding new functions that use less randomness?
For which case?
Like say in the Bell scenario, or in this general, or like when you use the multivariate Chernow bound, like you use these counting arguments.
Yes.
So do those counting arguments tell you what will be, like they give you a bound, but do they tell you how to do the compression, how to find the?
This multivariate Chernow bound is independent from the randomness compression, like nothing to do for randomness compression. We use multivariate Chernow bound to compress randomness in classical networks.
So it ends up giving an algorithm. So what it does is just make k samples from the randomness source.
Mm-hmm.
And then from those k samples, you create the new probability distribution from those.
Mm-hmm.
So the new distribution will be independently or uniformly choosing one of those k samples and just running with it. So it's algorithm.
Well, when you say you sample from blah blah blah, is there like a probability of failure of that?
Yeah, so Chernow, that's a Chernow.
Okay. And then you repeat until you until it works.
So the failure is
sure. Yeah, I guess you can repeat. I guess you can repeat, yeah. Any other questions? If not, Yukari will be around until the end of the week, I believe. You can find her by the beanbags on the second chair. On the second floor. That's her new office. And let's thank her again for a nice talk.